So last night we saw some really wonderful slideshows. The last one about Srila Prabhupada I found very clever. My husband had arranged to tell us that he was taking us on a parikram, and it was the greatest parikram. And then as we were going around Vrindavan parikram, I was thinking, yes, this is the greatest parikram, but so many times people glorify and go around Vrindavan, how does this become the greatest? And then, as he very expertly did, he took us on a parikram around the world. And this was the greatest parikram, Srila Prabhupada's traveling throughout the whole world, parikraming the world 10 times, 12 times in 8 to 10 years. And this is the result is that we, as we were hearing yesterday, are here sitting by the side of Govardhan and hearing about Krishna's pastimes in such an extraordinarily sweet and intimate way. So this was Srila Prabhupada's parikram, and he told me last night that when he was making that slideshow, he had no idea what he was doing. He didn't set out with a plan to create that effect, but it came by itself. So it was a very powerful presentation. So I was thinking about this parikram, and the first time that I came in touch with this particular tree that we'll speak about today was going on parikram. And in fact, anyone who goes on Vrindavan parikram has passed by this tree. On the bottom here we see at Kaliya Hirda, the Kaliya Gut Kelikadamba tree, on the very bottom one at the end. And this tree, he also has a slide show of. So if you ask him, anyone requests him, he may show that slideshow also. And that's very nice, where he intertwines the lila, the Kaliya lila, with the tree itself, which is very helpful because what we can see now in the Dham, you might wonder sometimes, you're hearing all of these wonderful pastimes, but what we see with our eyes, we see rickshaws and weddings and all sorts of things going on. Is this part of the transcendental Dham? What is this? Is this what's happening? So Srila Jiva Goswami, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his book Vrindavan Navadvip Mahatmya, he speaks about how what you can see in the Dham with your eyes, when Krishna's pastimes are not appearing in the Dham, is one of the features or aspects of the Dham, and it's called Drishyaman. It's the Dham in the condition of Drishyaman. And when Krishna's pastimes are manifest, that is called Prakat Lila. They're Prakat, visible to the eyes. And when Krishna's Lila in this particular place is finished, then only his Aprakat Lila is available. His Aprakat Lila means the Lila in Goloka Vrindavan. And for those who are very qualified, from here even, they can, within their hearts, they can perceive the Lila coming from Goloka Vrindavan. But when he appears here, he brings his whole Lila here. And then he takes his Lila, like Srila Prabhupada used the word, a road show, from one universe to another universe to another universe. So what we can see now, you could say, this is the Dham. It's not Vrindavan Dham, but there's, as if Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to give us an understanding, explained this like a very thin covering of the modes of nature over the Dham. And this all has to do with consciousness. And so when one's consciousness is absorbed in matter, then one exists on this very thin coating of Maya. And when one's consciousness becomes absorbed in Krishna, then one is able to penetrate that mayic covering and enter into the reality of Krishna's pastimes. So when Krishna appears in one universe and another universe and so forth, those who are fortunate, who have completed all of their, you could say, their course of study here in the material world, they have done appropriately well, they become promoted to participate in some way, to some degree, in Krishna's lila as it takes place in a particular universe. And from there, from association with those who are already nitya siddha, or who are already sadhana siddha, living entities, then that fortunate soul develops into an opportunity to actually personally serve and meet Krishna. So these trees are exalted personalities, and we should not in any way misunderstand them to be just trees. And we should pray to them, because they have great power and they can give blessings to us. So this Keli Kadamba tree, everyone passes this tree if they go around the Prikram of Vrindavan. And you see the tree, we saw some slides, some pictures of the tree last night with the hole at the end of the branch. So we named this tree for speaking today the oldest person in Vrindavan. It reminded me this morning of one time my husband went on Vrindavan Prikram. This was many, many years ago. And he came back and he said, next time I go on Prikram, I want to take you with me and introduce you to a really, really nice person that I met, to a very great soul that I met. So I thought, oh, this sounds very interesting. And he said, very, very, very wise, very, very deep. So I said, oh, all right. So I think this will be very nice. And I had in my mind conjuring up, I wonder who he's met. And so we walked and walked and walked around Vrindavan. And at that time, of course, it looked quite different than it does now. We came to the other side. We crossed past the Mathura Road, crossed the just near the railway track. And he stopped in front of one very, very large peepal tree. And he said, this is the person, this is the soul who I met. And this is before I was interested in trees, and after that I became quite fascinated with the thought of, this is the soul that you met. And I looked at the tree for a while, and I looked at my husband, and looked back at the tree, and he said, bow down. And so I bowed down, and the tree had a little platform around it for protection, so I bowed down, and he said, this is a very, very great person who's resided in Braj for a long time. So then I started to think, actually, this is true. And then I looked here and there and I saw there were so many great personalities. Some of them can reveal their story and some of them are silent to our language ears, but they're all very, very exalted souls. So this particular Kaliya tree dates back long, long, long time, because it has there's a history to this tree. This tree was existing here long before Krishna's pastimes were performed. And this tree goes back to the time when Kasyapa Muni, as we know, he married many, many of the daughters of Daksha. And some of them, the ones that are very familiar to us, are Diti, because she became the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. And therefore the Leela of Lord Nrisimhadev appeared in this world. And Aditi, who became the mother of all of the demigods. So these were two of his wives. But his oldest of his wives, her name was Kadru. And Kadru was the son of many, many, was the mother of many, many serpents. And amongst those serpents, the serpent who we know most, we are most familiar with, was Kaliya. Now, Kadru had a co-wife, one of her sisters, called Vinata. And Vinata was very gentle, and Kadru was very strong. And one day, in a kind of challenging way, Kadru said to Vinata, I want to have a game with you, a competition. She said, I want to see, I'll ask you one question, and as a result of answering the question, if you're right, or I'm right, whoever's right, the other one will serve that one as a maid servant for the rest of their life. And Vinata was a little nervous because she knew the nature of her sister Kadru. And Kadru asked Vinata, what color, you see up in the sky, what color are the tails of the sun god's horses? And so Kadru, this you can just imagine, this is in a previous time when persons had vastly different powers of vision than ourselves. But Kadru looked up and Vinita looked up and she said, their tails are white. But Kadru had a plan. She was a little bit devious. So she sent Kaliya, who had great powers, up into the sky and he was waiting. No, I'm sorry. She sent Kaliya up first and he covered the tails of the horses. And Kaliya was black. And so Vinita said, the tails of the horses are black. And then Kaliya moved aside. And Kadru said, no, look, they're white. So you should become my maidservant. So Vinata did that, and she was serving and serving and serving her sister, and she became somewhat sad. Now she had a very, very, very exalted son. Does anyone know who her son was? Garuda. So it's interesting to note that Kaliya and Garuda were brothers. So this enmity between them dated right back for a very long time. And so Garuda, one day he noticed as he grew up, he saw that his mother was always sad. And he asked her one day, what was the reason why she seemed to be always a little sad? And so she told him. And so he went to speak to his stepmother and he asked her, is there anything that I could give you that you would release my mother from this position? And Kadru thought, and she said, yes, there is. There's something that I would like. I would like a container of this Amrit, the nectar of immortality. If you can get that, then I will release your mother. So Garuda was very clever, of course. And so he flew to the place where this pastime was taking place, and he managed to acquire some of this nectar for his stepmother. And on the way back, he was flying over Vrindavan, and he dropped some drops upon this tree, because he knew that this tree would be very important in the future. And then he took the nectar and he gave it to his stepmother. So this took place a very long time ago. But the rivalry between these two brothers was very strong because of their natures. Kaliya was very hot-tempered and he was envious and very angry because he was in the form of a snake. And Garuda, of course, became the noble and exalted bird carrier of Lord Vishnu himself. So meanwhile, Subari Muni, a very great yogi, was meditating in the Jamuna waters. And Garuda used to go here and there, and for natural food of an eagle, a giant bird, he would eat sometimes snakes, sometimes fish, so many different living entities. And Subari Muni was meditating under the water, a great mystic yogi, timelessly meditating. And Garuda came there, and he was disturbing the fish. He was taking a fish here and there, and the fish became disturbed. And so Subari Muni felt that it was his duty on behalf of the fish with whom he was residing in the waters of the Jamuna to make some kind of an arrangement. So he asked Garuda, please don't come here and disturb the fish, because these fish you should not disturb. And Garuda, he is not under the command of Subari Muni, so Garuda said, all right. And he swooped down and he took one last fish. But the one last fish that he took was the leader of all the fish. And he took that fish and off he went. And Subari Muni became so angry at him because he's disturbing these fish. And the fish, they have their rights and so on and so forth. And so he made a curse. And he cursed that if Garuda ever comes to this place, ever again, then he will die. Now Subari Muni made, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, in trying to protect the fish, he made three big offenses. So this is a very interesting subject that comes to mind when we look at this particular place and this particular tree. Subari Muni's first offense was that he was ordering somebody who was superior to him. And he should not have done that. He should not have given orders to Garuda, who was in a superior position to himself. And his second offense was that he obstructed the happiness of Garuda, who naturally would come there, and it was his nature, it was as a bird, to eat the fish. So he obstructed that. And the third offense, which I found interesting when I was looking at this morning in the Sarata Darshani, was that because he banned Garuda, he attempted to help the fish, and by trying to help the fish, he obstructed a Vaishnava. And so his compassion for the fish turned into anger towards Garuda. By trying to help the fish, he got angry at Garuda. And when he got angry at Garuda, this became a very serious matter. And so there were two effects of this when he made this offense. One of them was that Garuda never came there again. He never wanted to visit that place. He knew what had taken place. He didn't care to go there. And because Garuda didn't go there, Kaliya went there. And when Kaliya came, then his poison, because he was so lethally poisonous, poisoned and killed all the fish. And everyone was destroyed as a result of Subharimuni's offense. And the other side, which I also found very sobering when I was reading this pastime, is that Subharimuni gradually developed some material desires. Before that, he was living, meditating under the water for a very long time. And suddenly, he opened his eyes, and left and right, he saw the fish. And now it was only him and the fish. So he's looking at the fish, and he saw the fish were mating, and the fish were doing all sorts of things. And this started to present seeds in his heart, and he suddenly thought, perhaps I should also get married. It would be nice to be married. Look, they seem to be having a nice time. And so he got up from the waters of the Jamuna, and imagine, he'd been under the water for so long, he was all shriveled and old. And he took himself to one very, very famous king. His name was Mandata. And Mandata, Maharaj Mandata, he's the father of Muchukunda. And he had also daughters. And Subharimuni came into the king's court. And when the king saw the yogi, he knew that this was going to be very delicate. Because if you say anything to him, he's elderly looking, very hard looking. If you say anything and he becomes upset, he can make a curse. So he was on his best behavior. And the sage came in, Subharimuni came, and he said, my dear king, I wish to marry your daughter. And the king looked at him. He's so old and ancient and wrinkly and skin is all horrible and he didn't know what to say. And so he said very tactfully, he said, well, he said, my daughters, he had many daughters, are in the inner courtyard of the inner palace. If you like, you can go there. And if any of them choose you, he wasn't very attractive, then they can marry you. They have my consent. So Subharimuni knew what the king's mind was. He understood what the king was thinking. So before he went into the inner a palace to meet these princesses or to have them visually see him. Being a mystic yogi, he transformed himself, his old, aged, ugly, decrepit body, into a very handsome young man. You see how much he had become deviated? Before he was deeply meditating in the waters of the Jamuna, and now he was meddling and playing with the material energy, and he became very handsome. And he walked straight into the palace, and when he walked in, all 50 daughters immediately saw him and said, I want to marry him. And all of a sudden, 50 wives. He went from this great, renounced ascetic to 50 wives and 50 girls. What can he do? So he's a yogi. So yogis can do all kinds of things. So he transformed himself into 50 forms of himself. And in 50 forms, he married 50 daughters. So he had 50 times the material desires and the enjoyment as a result of his offense. And so he became totally submerged in enjoyment. And he could mystically create palaces. He created beautiful palaces for his queens. And they, of course, expanded families and so many things. And so he got so totally immersed in material life. And he was like that, and he stayed like that for a long, long time, just enjoying and enjoying and enjoying. And then one day, as the result, the effect of his offense was minimizing, he came to his senses and he looked at this, he looked and said, what am I doing? I set out to become this liberated soul, and look what I've got now. And he looked at his palaces and his queens and his 50 forms and his 50 wives, and he decided, I don't want this. I started off to be renounced. I wish to give this all up and again become renounced. So he spoke to his queens, and as far as the Bhagavatam describes, I believe they all, his queens and he, they all left all of their material opulence, and he returned to the forest and proceeded on with his spiritual journey. As the result of the mercy of the Jamuna that he had taken shelter of in his former life. So it's interesting to trace what happened to Subari Muni and why and how he went that way. And there is Garuda and Kaliya. So meanwhile, Garuda continued to eat snakes and fish, and he went to the Ramanaka island where Kaliya lived, and he ate some snakes, and then the snakes appealed to Vasuki, who's the king of all snakes, and asked him, please do something. He keeps coming here and giving us so much difficulty. And so Vasuki said, all right, one time every month on the full moon, you offer him some offering. And then he should obey this. Just take this. Don't come more. And so all the snakes agreed. But Kaliya was the leader of the snakes, and he didn't agree. And so not only didn't he make the suitable offering to Garuda, but he went and ate the offering that was made for Garuda. And this made Garuda very angry with his stepbrother, with his brother. And immediately what he did was he went to attack him. And so then Kaliya, out of fear, knowing this, he had been told about this little lake in the Jamuna, he immediately fled with all of his family members and went to live in the Hrida, Kaliya Hrida. And as a result, his poison was so heating and venomous that it heated and boiled and bubbled the water in this particular lake. And he lived, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in a fascinating way, described that he lived in palaces made of water. So this is, again, one of these extraordinary things that our rational faculty has not encountered. So we think, I pour water out of the tap every day, and I've never seen water crystallize into any form. How could you have a palace of water? But yes, Krishna can do anything. And Vrindavan Dham is extraordinary. So Kaliya lived in a palace of water with his many family, his wives, his little children, fish, snakes, and so forth. He was living there. And as a result, we hear of playing. The cowherd boys came to the bank of the Jamuna where all the other vegetation had died because of Kaliya's poison. But this one tree, this tree, had remained very, very, very strong and very green and very healthy. So when the boys sipped the water of the Jamuna, which they should not have done, but they were so tired and thirsty, they immediately fell down unconscious, as if dead. And Krishna immediately brought them back to life with his eyes, and the boys were so grateful. Just see, Krishna, he can do anything. He can protect us. Even though they have eternal transcendental bodies, they experience this phenomena of relationship with Krishna in this way. So then Krishna saw that the waters were bubbling, frothing up with red and golden froth from the poison of Kaliya deep in the water. And he decided that he would teach Kaliya a lesson and chastise him. So he climbed up this particular Kadamba tree and he tightened his belt because he was going to jump. He tied back his hair. He reshaped his turban. He made fists with his hands. And then he got himself ready and he jumped into the water. Now, different acharyas say that the effect of this little boy, small in size, jumping into the water, created waves of different degrees. Sometimes it is said that these waves were so huge that they flooded the whole area around momentarily when he jumped into the water. But he jumped into the water and he went down, down, down into the water. And when he came up again, he started splashing his arms and playing in the water and having so much fun. And Kaliya could feel the effects of the presence of Krishna in the water. And so, as we know, he appeared there. And when he saw Krishna, it was so beautiful. As Sanatan Goswami, as we were hearing yesterday, he describes that Kaliya actually became very attracted to Krishna. But his nature was one of great anger because he was a snake. So he became propelled forward by his angry nature, and he grabbed Krishna and caught him in his coils, as if to crush him. And meanwhile, the residents of Vrindavan saw three different kinds of inauspicious omens. They saw omens in the sky, that there were dust storms and lightning without any clouds, without any reason. And they saw omens on the ground. There were earthquakes and the ground was shaking. And they saw omens in the body of men, that people started to shiver And on the inauspicious side of the body, they began to tremble. And everybody realized that today Krishna went out to the forest without his elder brother Balaram. And they became very, very, very worried. Perhaps something has happened to him. And then they left the village when they heard wailing coming from the cowherd boys who were now seeing Krishna in this condition. And one old man, it is said, came and told them what was happening. And everyone left the village. Kavi Karnapur tells us everyone from the one-year-old to the old man, they all left the Vrindavan village together and raced to where Krishna was. Because they had nothing but Krishna. He was everything to them. So if something happened to Krishna, it was like their life ended. There was nothing else to live for, only for the service and loving pleasure of Krishna. So they ran to the bank of the Jamuna. And at that time, Nanda Maharaj, he wanted to jump into the water. Filled with panic and shock, Nanda Maharaj cried out in a voice choked with tears. "Oh, my darling son," he said, "why have you suddenly done this? Oh, dearest of all, please come back to us." Gripped with lamentation, the cowherd boys fell down unconscious on the ground around the king of Vrindavan, and Yasoda Devi swooned in equal distress and sadness. Sympathized with her and wailing piteously, all the elderly gopis collapsed on the ground near the queen of Braj. So why does Krishna do this? Why does he put these very dear devotees to him into such agony? What is he? Does he have some sort of a, you know, some kind of a problem that he likes to see the people who are closest to him suffer? Because sometimes the conditioned souls think like that. How can I take shelter of somebody who doesn't, you know, who knows what he will do? He's very strange. You know, I'll pray to him, please help me with this, this, and this, and he may do something opposite. How can I trust such a personality? But no, this is the ignorance of a person who does not understand the principle of rasa, or the sweetness of loving exchange between Krishna and his devotees. Because they love him wholeheartedly, everything that he does is to increase their love, and everything that they do is to please him. So both sides, they're trying to increase the pleasure of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna will put them into such anguish. This is hard to understand for a materialized mind. But everything that Krishna does, this is the fact, is not what it seems. It is always just to increase the loving exchange between them. So Krishna had finally, at Balaram's request, Sanatana Goswami says that finally Balaram said, "Krishna, do something. If you don't stop this pastime, all the residents of Vrindavan will die. These are not the residents of Vaikuntha who worship you in majesty. These are your most intimate residents of Vrindavan. Don't treat them like this." And Balaram can speak that way. And meanwhile, tell the residents of Vrindavan, "Don't worry. This is an insignificant snake. This is not any..." And Balaram was smiling when he said, "This is just a snake." And why was he smiling? The insight is given that he was thinking that he never plays like this with me in my form as Ananta Shesh. But look what he's doing with this ordinary wicked Kaliya. He's there intimately exchanging with him. So then Krishna, when he realized the time was right, he released himself by expanding from the coils of Kaliya, and he could no longer hold him in his embrace. And Sanatana Goswami, as my husband was saying, explains that Kaliya was actually embracing Krishna. Others say, and perhaps equally true, that he wanted to kill and crush him. But Kaliya, he then became the dancing place for Krishna to do wonderful, wonderful dancing. The most expert artistic dancing took place, where Krishna used all of his hundreds of heads. I was just thinking, just imagine if there was some dancer, like a dancer, perhaps he can dance on a table or dance on something very small and narrow, and everyone thinks, "Oh, he's so expert." But imagine if he's dancing on different layers and they're all moving at the same time, some up, some are down, and he's dancing and he jumps from one to the other and dances on one and dances on the other, and the jewels on Kaliya's head were glowing and glittering and illuminating Krishna's feet as he danced so expertly from one head to another of Kaliya. But meanwhile, this is what he's showing, he's displaying to the residents of Vrindavan. But Kaliya is experiencing Krishna's dancing on his head like death. Krishna's dancing, beating on the heads of Kaliya. Kaliya, first of all, he fought Krishna, so therefore he'd raise his heads and Krishna would jump to another head and jump and jump and jump from one head to another. But Krishna was beating out the poison in Kaliya. He beat out the pride of Kaliya. He made each one of his heads as they rose up bow down to him as he jumped on the feet, on his feet up and down on the heads of Kaliya, until Kaliya was practically, all the poison had come out of him completely, but also his life was about to leave him as well. And it is said that his wives were actually great souls. They were great devotees. And when they knew always that Krishna, that Kaliya had this venom in him, they didn't like this. And so quietly they used to think, actually he's angry at Krishna, if we become widows, it's all right. Because look at him, look what he's doing. He's defiant to the Lord. But when they saw that the poison was coming out of Kaliya and he was becoming more and more exhausted, and now he was actually realizing who it was who was beating on his heads and he was becoming submissive, then his wives changed their attitudes and they thought, we must now speak something to save our husband because he's in difficulty and he may leave this world. So they appeared and they began to offer prayers to Krishna. And these prayers are very, very nice. And practically speaking, Kaliya, when it was his turn to pray, he just repeated his wife's prayers, because his wife's prayers were so beautiful. And Kaliya was not so advanced as his wives, so he just paraphrased their prayers. But there's one nice thing in the prayer that I thought I would read to you. So they were praying to Krishna, please save our husband. We know that he's a rascal. We know that he's done so many foolish things. We are not trying to kid ourselves, but please save him. So they said, O one who is dear to those who have nothing. Living entities appear by different combinations of the modes of material nature. Being born in the mode of ignorance, it is natural for a snake like Kaliya to be crooked, and it is impossible to see a flower creeper as it is impossible to see a flower creeper in the sky, so it is also impossible to find gentle behavior or good manners in our husband. He does nothing good for anyone, and he has no power to overcome your maya. This is the nature of one who lives in a hole. His actions cannot be considered offensive, however, because that is his very nature. So how can you, who are eternally liberated, the ocean of mercy, and full of all opulence, how can you deny him your mercy, even though he's so bad? You always treat everyone equally, and all your acts convey auspiciousness. Therefore, please, quickly show your grace to our afflicted husband. It does not befit you to kill such a lowly living entity. So they didn't praise Kaliya. They spoke very straightforwardly to the Lord about his condition, but they begged on his behalf. So like yesterday, we saw how Narada produced wonderful effects for the fallen Nalakuvera and Manigriva. We see that the wives of the Nagna Patnis, the wives of Kaliya, also did likewise. They produced an effect that Krishna became very happy. He said, your pleasing prayers have removed my intense anger, and as a result I will spare his life, but I have one request for your husband. He should leave here immediately. He should take all of his family members and he should go back to the Ramanaka island. And if he's worried that Garuda, he will come and attack him again, he should not worry, because he has the mark of my feet on his head. So when Garuda sees him, he'll be very happy to see him, and he will offer all respects to him. But now you should all leave and go back. And so Kaliya agreed, And Krishna, it is described in the Sarita Darshani that Krishna, he came out of the waters. Kaliya gave him a beautiful jewel, a garland and a jeweled necklace. And the wives of Kaliya gave him so many gifts. And he was dressed really beautifully when he came out. And he says that he came out of the water looking very handsome. It doesn't describe that he swam out of the water. His clothes were wet. It describes he came out looking very majestic with all of these new things that he'd been given. And this is because Kaliya ordered the snakes in his company to make their way like this so he could step from snake to snake to snake to snake so that he could come back onto the ground and meet with the residents of Vrindavan who were all besides themselves with joy to have their beloved Krishna back in their presence. And one last point is that it is said that the gopis, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes that the gopis somehow or other mystically arranged to also get out to this island of Kaliya's hoods. And on the heads of Kaliya they did a beautiful, beautiful rasa dance, the most supreme of all Krishna's dances, which we will hear about when we discuss some of the pastime trees related to the rasa dance. And Krishna danced with them, invisible to the residents of Vrindavan. The cowherd men and women could not see the gopis. They could just see Krishna dancing. But in this way, he had everything arranged by his yogamaya lila shakti for his transcendental pleasure and for the pleasure of the residents of Vrindavan. So we should go and see this tree. It's easy to see near our Krishna Balaram Mandir, and bow down to this tree and pray that, like a lowly snake, I have a very strong conditioned nature. Please, 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 to this tree, be merciful to me so that I too can become freed from all the unwanted snake-like qualities within my heart. They also can leave and I can become fit for the service of Radha and Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada and Sushi Gaur Nittai. Thank you very much. Hari Bol.